could tell you about ordinary cue balls to set the stage, and then gauged cue balls, and then cue balls in Maxwell Chern-Simons theory. Now, okay, so first of all, motivation, so that you'll know whether or not you should daydream for the rest of the talk until Manu comes on. So why are we interested in this? Well, it's not going to make a better toaster. It's not even going to do something less important like solve quantum gravity. But I guess the main motivation would be that Chern-Simons terms have lots of intrinsic interest, both from the physics and the mathematics point of view. So anything you can do in a theory with a Chern-Simons term is justified just because it's got a Chern-Simons term in it. I guess that's all I need to say, really. So did I lose you all? Okay, anyways, on to basic cue balls. These were a type of soliton discovered by Coleman with some prehistory that I won't go into in 1985, if I remember right. And these objects arise in a scalar field theory with a complex scalar field with a conserved charge in a symmetry, in a theory that doesn't have spontaneous symmetry breaking. To see that these objects arise, the question to ask is basically, what's the smallest, the lowest energy configuration of a given charge? Now, the no-brainer answer would be just take, if you have charge 6, you take 6 particles and place them far apart, and the energy at rest, and the energy will be 6 times the mass of the particle. If there are attractive forces, then you can do better than that by having bound states and whatnot. A cue ball is, in a way, a classical field theory version of a bound state of particles in this model. So I'm not even going to take the time to write down the Lagrangian for the model. It's rather simple anyways. It's just a typical complex scalar field Lagrangian with a potential that might look like this. The important points are that it's minimized at the origin, so the symmetry is not broken. It describes a massive particle, so there's a non-zero curvature at the origin. And the potential has to drop off, basically, so that a shallower parabola intersects with the potential at some point. That's all you need for obtain cue balls. The shallowness of the potential is sort of indicative of an attractive force. It's not entirely surprising that there might be configurations with energy lower than the naive lowest energy. To find cue balls, you can stick in an ansatz, cleverly chosen ansatz, which has the field, the complex field, a real function of r times a time varying phase, with a f of r starting off at some non-zero value to be determined dynamically and going to zero as it must as r goes to infinity. The theory being massive, this approach to zero happens exponentially. And what can be shown, and was done in beautiful detail, as usual, I guess, by Coleman, is that there are charge configurations of the cue ball type with any charge, any charge that have energy less than the naive minimum energy configuration of that charge. The frequency determines the charge in the basic case, and as the frequency goes up, if I had 5 more minutes, I could have explained why, but as the frequency goes up, the charge goes down, for what that's worth. So Coleman studied in detail the case of large cue balls, and the case of small cue balls was discussed in detail by Kusenko. Everything was done in 3+1 dimensions, but nothing greatly different happens in 2+1 dimensions. All the same conclusions applied. So the numerical details are a little bit different. Now, with gauged cue balls, you can ask the same question. Can this occur in a model where the symmetry is gauged? I should say that Coleman's paper contains the conclusions come out very nicely by considering a mechanical analogy. This function f of r can be thought of as a position of a particle in an equivalent in a in the mechanical analogy, and R is the time. It's a very, very clean example. Unfortunately, that nice example that Coleman gives kind of ends at the basic model. You can no longer use this mechanical analogy, as far as I can tell, at least in more complicated models. So the question, ask the same question in the gauge case. The answer is yes for the 3+1 dimensional case. This was studied in a paper by Kim Yong Lee and co-authors in 89, I guess. And the gauge field, I mean, the easiest thing to say is that the gauge field contributes to the energy, the cue ball being charged, it has an electric field, and the electric field contributes to the energy. And not surprisingly, as the charge goes up, the electric field energy goes up. So eventually, the cue ball would not compete with the energy of the ordinary matter, because the electric field energy goes up like the square of the charge, approximately. So just to give you a quick feel for what the gauged cue ball looks like, because the Maxwell Chern-Simons cue ball will look like a slight generalization of that. We have an ansatz with the same scalar field form, and there's just a scalar potential and no vector potential. Scalar potential a function of R only. And we can try, the sort of most brainless thing to try is the same form for F. Of course, the details will be different, but the same rough form. And then a gauge potential that has roughly the same form. You can show that it should go to a constant here and decay like 1 over R here. 1 over R here describing, of course, an ordinary electric field at long distances. It's sort of a mirror image of a superconducting vortex, because instead of having the scalar field non-zero in the vacuum and zero at the core of the vortex, this is the other way around. So that's kind of interesting. It's make the observation that the core of the vortex is superconducting, for whatever that's worth. Now, if you try to do the same thing in two dimensions, you're beat before you start for a completely mundane reason. It's because the electric field in two dimensions will go like 1 over R, and so the electric field energy will diverge. So you can't compete with ordinary matter. However, in 2+1 dimensions, we have the option of throwing in a Chern-Simons term, another term that can provide, depends on just the gauge field. Here is the Chern-Simons term, if there are any of you out there who haven't seen it before. So one can consider just a Lagrangian of kinetic term for the scalar potential, and then throw in the Chern-Simons term. The Chern-Simons term does a lot of neat things, but the relevant one here is that it gives a mass to the vector particle. So what that does is it changes the behavior of the electric field at large distances. The electric field falls off not like 1 over R, but exponentially. So the previously divergent electric field energy is rendered finite by the Chern-Simons term. So it now makes sense to ask, can the Maxwell Chern-Simons cue ball compete energetically with ordinary, with naive minimum energy configuration? Well, we address the question in the same way by staring at the equations for a bit and figuring out a suitable ansatz, which is not terribly difficult. The same form for phi and a zero, to which we add a vector potential, which is of this form, the most spherically symmetric thing it can be, I suppose. And it turns out that the function of R, which I've written beta here, goes to zero at the origin and falls off like 1 over R at large distances. 1 over R is not a problem for the vector potential, because that describes a pure gauge. It's just saying that the object has a magnetic flux. One of the other interesting properties of the Chern-Simons term, no problem, is that mixes electric and magnetic fields. So a static charge, as provided by the cue ball, gives rise not only to an electric field, but to a magnetic field. Sorry about that. Okay, so well, we did a bit of number crunching. You'll be happy to know that since I don't have time, I can't go into much detail with the numerical work, which is not terribly interesting, and the results can be sort of guessed at anyway. So, okay. Anyways, there are several parameters of the model. There's this omega, which is a parameter of the solution as well, but there's parameters of the Higgs potential, and two parameters that are more directly related to the electromagnetic field, the charge of the particles and the coefficient of the Chern-Simons term. So it's interesting to see how the energetics of cue balls varies as a function of E and kappa. Now, it can be shown that, and it's fairly obvious, that as E goes up, you expect the electromagnetic energy to increase. So it makes it more and more difficult to to compete with ordinary matter. Similarly, as kappa goes up, the electromagnetic field gets cut off more quickly. So the electromagnetic contribution to the energy goes down. So that you would expect would make it easier for cue balls to arise. And both of these things are borne out by numerical work. So it's always good in life to have a bit of relaxation. And that's true also in numerical work. So we use a routine called relaxation, where you guess a solution, have the computer decide by how much it's not a solution, construct a change, and then evaluate how much that new solution is not a solution and whatnot. Just relaxing to a point where you get a sufficiently good solution. Okay, so that's roughly how it works. So I'll explain very, very well in numerical recipes. I'm ashamed to admit that I use numerical recipes in Fortran, but you can get it in C and C++ and whatever. Okay, anyways, so the solutions. Notice I haven't had any problems this whole talk, by the way, with pushing the button and changing pages. It's the advantage of this technology as opposed to that technology. Okay, I guess none of you are at Pearson's talk this morning. All right, anyways, what do we get when we look for the solutions? Well, we have to fix the parameters of the solution and the model. So for fixed E and kappa, we vary the parameter of the solution omega, the frequency. And we can calculate, as a function of omega, everything about the solution, but in particular, the energy divided by the charge. Have I got a couple more minutes, or? Three, OK, great. OK, so we can the energy divided by the charge in units where the particle mass is 1. Indicates how well the cue ball competes with ordinary matter, because ordinary matter has the lowest energy is equal to the charge for unit mass. So E over Q equals 1 is sort of the acid test. If E over Q can be made less than 1, then the cue ball is energetically favorable over ordinary matter. So either it is stable or else something else interesting is stable, because it can't decay into ordinary matter. Okay, so what do we get as we vary omega? Well, a strange fact, which I have no profound explanation of, is that for a given omega, two solutions can be found, one with large charge and one with small charge. I guess the charge is easiest to see in the right diagram, where I write E over Q as a function of Q. So there are, for the particular values of the chart of the parameters of the model that I chose here, charges can go up to about 10 to the 5 or something like that. So there are values with large charges and small charges. Either curve tells you to what degree the solution is energetically advantageous. So the most advantageous configuration would be here. So a cue ball with larger charge out here would want to split up into a bunch of cue balls with smaller charges here. And similarly, a bunch of cue balls out in this range here would want to conglomerate to form a bigger cue ball. So this is what the energetics looks like for a particular values of E and kappa. The numerical values are not that important for me. As I said, we expect that as E goes up, the solutions are more difficult, and as kappa goes up, they're easier to find. And this is borne out if we constructed a family of curves as E gets bigger and bigger, the curves would sort of be a nested bunch of curves that eventually kind of go away. So as E gets big, they get harder and harder to make. And similarly, as kappa gets small, they get harder and harder to make. And I'm done. And you agree, I'm done. OK. Anyways, conclusions. I'm absolutely out of time, so all the conclusions say is what I already told you. So thank you very much for your attention.